You're listening to Asheville FM News Hour. I'm News Team Correspondent KP Whaley. We are switching gears now in this series of the LGBT health survey put out by the Campaign for Southern Equality. We are going to be talking today about mental health and the mental health respondents from the survey. Joining me in studio is Ivy Hill, the Community Health Program Director. Ivy, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Also joining us in studio is Winston Sanders, New Southern Leaders Fellow. And Winston, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely.
Ivy, do you want to kick us off here in terms of some of the numbers that we saw with mental health issues?
We saw a lot of numbers. The survey report is how many pages? Almost 200. But some of them that stand out to me are really particularly the issues that trans folks reported around mental health. More than half of all respondents, as well as 2/3 of trans respondents and 3/4 of non-binary respondents, rate their mental health as fair or poor. That's huge. Mm-hmm. 75% mm-hmm. of non-binary folks say their mental health is either fair or poor. That's a lot of us. And so there's something in that that feels comforting to me, to know that I'm not the only one. But the more dominant feeling in that is how heartbreaking it is that these are issues that almost across ubiquitously our community is dealing with.
Yeah. And with that comes a lot of other problems. So if you're suffering mental health, your anxiety levels are bigger, your suicidal ideation is more strong, and that's kind of what this report has consistently found in that as well, correct?
Yep, definitely. 86% of non-binary respondents said that they've struggled with depression. 80% of trans respondents said the same thing. 54% of respondents overall said they struggle with depression, which is still a very high number, but I'm just really taken aback when I read those numbers of the trans community of 80% for trans folks and 86% for non-binary folks. That's almost all of us who are having issues with depression. Yeah.
Right. And then so compound that with the fact that large majority of those folks also can't find quality health care. They perhaps aren't in a position where they can afford quality health care. So, you know, when it comes to finding mental health services, are there mental health services available?
Some. There are some mental health services available. And if you're a trans person or a non-binary person who's looking for a mental health provider and haven't been able to find one, I strongly encourage you to check out the Trans in the South guide. You may be able to find some resources there that could help. But overall, the systems have really failed us. And that's what I think this data says very loudly and clearly. And what we have seen, and we heard a lot of this also with the Trans Health Focus Group report, which was research that we published last year, is that the importance of the role that grassroots leaders and nonprofit organizations are playing in stepping up and filling those gaps for folks and creating community-led spaces where people are able to get some level of support. Obviously, it's still not enough. We need the systems to change. We need change at a systems level desperately. But also, this isn't a completely bleak picture, and I think that we would be remiss to not mention the really heroic work being done by grassroots leaders across the South to fill these gaps.
Yeah, thanks for that. Yeah. I'm as a cisgendered white gay man, it's telling that to look at the history of mental health within the gay community, within the LGBTQ community, and I don't mean to relate my experience to a person of color who's trans, but I think it's interesting that, you know, back 20 years ago, 30 years ago, there was this belief that, oh, your mental health is why that you are gay. And we've come a long way, I think, in the last few decades to realize that, no, I have mental health issues because you all can't accept me. And I think that we are now seeing that with the trans community, which I think is interesting. Like, why didn't we learn that 30 years ago?
That's a great question. Yeah, I don't know. But I do think we are starting to see some positive culture shift, too. I mean, you know, obviously there's a lot of really sad stuff that can be lifted up, but also there's positive stuff, too.
Right. I would say that in the community organizing efforts and everything like that, Genderbenders was one of three recipients this year for their LGBTQ health equality, I think it was called, pledge, and we were granted $10,000 for our annual Camp Genderbenders, which is an intergenerational camp that's put on every year. And this year we were able to have the services of QMED, which is a office based in Atlanta, Georgia, that provides like hormone replacement therapy to those that are seeking that kind of care. And also provided gender marker changes, letters for folks that would like their gender marker changed. So in that, we're seeing that even though this is a disparity in the region, we're also being able to combat that with a partnership like the Genderbenders and Campaign for Southern Equality to help our community access the care that they need.
Mm-hmm. Good time to mention Genderbenders, because you've mentioned a couple of times now, but we haven't actually found out what that is. So you want to tell us a little bit about Genderbenders and what that mission is?
Yeah, well, Genderbenders is a grassroots organization based in upstate South Carolina that is a support and advocacy group for transgender and gender nonconforming folks in the upstate of South Carolina, but also we do southeastern work. So one of our big parts of programming is this Camp GB. That's a 4-day, 3-night magical special kind of thing where trans folks and non-binary folks alike are just there loving on each other, caring for one another. You don't find any misgendering of names or pronouns or anything like that. It's just a lot of love, a lot of compassion, a lot of holding space for one another, and strategic work and planning to how we're going to transform the South in mm-hmm. ways that we already have and ways that we can make it better.
I think that camp is a cool example. One, because we can talk more about it because we run the camp.
Great.
But also camp is just one example. There's lots of other examples too, but is a cool example of how grassroots organizations and grassroots leaders are stepping up and filling those gaps. So we've been running summer camp for, this was our 7th year doing it. And over the last couple years have just looked at it more and more like, how can we build this out as a pipeline for resource delivery, where we're creating a bubble of trans community, for a few days. What can we do to bring the service providers to us and get people an opportunity to build those relationships with providers in a non-clinical setting, which we think goes a long way to have that be a positive experience for everybody, and is definitely something that we saw anecdotally at camp this summer.
Mm-hmm. And I should say, you know, what I said earlier, kind of, I guess I meant by the community or the community at large, because the mental health professional community has really kind of helped considerably with the trans community, correct? I mean, they're supportive and positive. You're finding healthcare providers, mental health care providers in the trans community being supportive?
Largely, yeah. I mean, I don't think that we can say that across the board is true. There's definitely, I mean, like, you know, there's bans, there folks are working on bans around conversion therapy and stuff like that. So, you know, I think that negative side of things is still present, but is getting smaller, and we are seeing more growth of folks who are supportive of our community.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the fact that, I mean, you focused on the South, but do you think there is a difference between the South and the North? Is there, I mean, there's a larger population of queer people here in the South than elsewhere, and yet we're still seeing some pretty disparaging sort of views on where we're at.
I think it's resources.
Yeah.
I mean, for me and in my mind of where I think it lands, is that the resource, there's a lot more resources available in the North than there is in the South. And of affirmingness, you know, and clinics and things like that. Like we have it here, we're growing it here, but I don't think that it's as easy to access.
I think I definitely agree with all that. I think another piece of it in the South that does make it a little bit different here is that our culture is really steeped in this anti-LGBT religion. And we see that really permeate all spheres of life, including access to healthcare. And that stings in a really specific kind of way when that discrimination has this religious stamp of approval on it. And I think that's the kind of stuff that we see here in the South a lot more than you see in other regions of the country. But absolutely, the South is home to more LGBT folks, like proportionally than other regions. There's more than 500,000 trans folks who live in the South. Mm-hmm. And I think it's 35% of LGBT folks nationally live in the South.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. And the ban on conversion therapy, obviously, is something Campaign for Southern Equality has done a lot of work on as well, and we are making progress there. Is there any other work that either you're doing in Gender Benders or within the campaign to get Southern equality for LGBT folks that you want to mention before we wrap up?
There's a lot of stuff that we're doing, but one of the pieces of work that Winston and I both do a lot of is cultural competency training for primary care providers and mental health providers. So over the last year, we've provided training to over 1,000 medical providers, and so that's something that we're both really passionate about, is making that education more accessible for folks. I can't remember if it was this segment or the last time that we chatted, but we talked a little bit about how the providers that are competent have had to really seek out that education themselves. And I think that that's one of the big barriers in place. I don't think it's necessarily that people don't want to be affirming, that people don't want to treat us. I think that the want is there. They just haven't had access to the education. Oftentimes, not all the time, but oftentimes that's the case. And so that's something we do a lot of work on. If folks want to book a training with us, they can absolutely reach out to either one of us, and we'd be happy to do that.
It's also a very, very interactive training.
We have a lot of fun.
We do. I like to consider us almost like game show hosts a little bit. So, and I think that's, a key and fundamental thing of like learning is to make it engaging and in some way of the definition of fun, because you retain more. And that's, I think that's kind of like a lot of what we're trying to get folks to understand, like just retain the fact that we're people and we deserve affirming and quality care just as much as our cis counterparts.
Mm. Well, thank you both so much for the work that you do and for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having us.